This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, back from Hawaii. What a weekend it was. So many people to thank. We will get to great sponsors, just great people out there in Honolulu. But before we do that, let's bring in my partner in crime, who will be joining me every Monday or Tuesday, whenever this gets released, to recap the weekend that was, do some weekday games, updated power rankings, the one and only Adam Burke. Mr. Burke, how'd you take in week zero of the college football season?
Well, I am not back from Hawaii, so...
You're still there!
I wish. I did not take in week zero from Hawaii like you did, but you know what? I would like to make a proposal to start off today's show. I know. I'm already married, so I'm not going to ask you that, Tim.
I'm married too.
Well, good. So I think we should have at least one preseason game in college football, right? Like, I understand it's a long season for these kids and you worry about injuries and all that kind of thing, but the quality of play was really, I mean, outside of Kansas and Western Kentucky, I would say, the quality of play was not great. And I realize Iowa State and Kansas State had some conditions to deal with, but man, it was a very sloppy week zero, and it's probably going to be sloppy in a lot of these week one games. And with how short the season is, I mean, 12 games in the regular season, like, you don't have a lot of margin for error. I think it'd be really nice to see these teams kind of be able to, you know, be firing on all cylinders a little bit better heading into the season.
Well, UNLV, a team that was very unknown, they survive a scare as 30-point favorites against Idaho State. So did they get the kinks out of their system? We're going to get into market movements because the market has moved very much against them, and that might just be an update in power ratings. Stanford doesn't play this week, but I can tell you one thing. Can't really envision them being a favorite in any game the rest of the year. And that they host San Jose State. Curious to see what that number ultimately is. Not to say that Stanford's going to go winless, but no FCS team on the schedule. We'll dive into Stanford here in just a moment. And then the curiosity regarding Western Kentucky as they went back to the Bailey Zappi, Zach Kittley well, as they brought in the offensive coordinator and quarterback of an FCS program. I believe it was Abilene Christian. Mm-hmm. And the McIver looked the part, but I know that's a game that certainly you had some interest in, knowing that you've got Liberty winning the conference, and I tailed your play. So, yeah, nothing too crazy regarding week zero, but I want to dive into the game just real quickly about that we went out to Hawaii for. And like I said, so many people to thank. Hopefully you folks enjoyed it. Watching the shows on Friday and Saturday, the backdrops were just phenomenal. On Friday, we were at the Ching Complex, the home of Hawaii football, and we were joined by Timmy Chang. We were joined by Matt Elliott, their athletic director, Aaron Gannat, the men's basketball coach, Kanoa Leahy, who calls almost every Hawaii athletics event on television. He did not call Saturday because it was nationally televised on CBS. So, everyone was great. Our sponsors, Rainbow Authentics, Mike Kawazoe and company, just doing an amazing job. Kahala shirts. I got so many mentions regarding our Hawaiian shirts that we were wearing. So Kahala shirts were a big hit. And then the Sheraton Waikiki really hooked it up for us on Saturday. Our backdrop was just absolutely spectacular. And Dara and her crew over there at the Sheraton really hooked us up. And, you know, last but certainly not least, Nahoku, who will be a part of this podcast all year long, Steve Bookatz being the title sponsor of this trip. They were the reason we were able to go. So, yeah, it was a ton of fun, man. And then, you know, being there for that game, it's I'm not going to say it was SEC or, you know, big time college football feel, but it was really unique, you know, 15,000 sellout crowd there, everyone wearing white except for a sliver of red there of Stanford fans. The entrance, you know, with the haka coming out was pretty badass. And then you got to the game, and Hawaii puts themselves immediately in a hole. It's a, you know, 8-minute drive for Stanford out of the chute, kind of doing what we worried they could potentially do, which was just wanting to grind it out. Logan Ryan of CBS joined us in studio, who had the call, Adam, on Friday, and he got the sense that that's what they wanted to do, just kind of grind out this game. They ended up having 36 minutes of possession. Their first possession was 16 plays, 70 yards, and then Hawaii made a massive mistake and fielded the kickoff at the 1-yard line. They thought the returner thought he was going to bring it out to the 25. He ultimately made a mistake on a bounce, called a fair catch, and then Micah Alejado gets sacked in the end zone. You're thinking, oh boy, here we go. But I give them credit for battling all the way back. And then the great story of the kicker being I believe the only Japanese player in college football, Matsuzawa, hits a 38-yarder as the game ends and they win. He was a guy who taught himself English when he went to junior college, Adam, and learned how to kick on YouTube. He hits 3 clutch field goals. They win 23-20. So this was a game Matt and I talked about, saying, man, this is just so massive for Hawaii. There's so much pressure on them to win this game. They hadn't beaten a Power 4 team since 2019. This was, you know, the start of what they believed to be a bowl type of season here for the Rainbow Warriors. I bet them in this game way back in July. I bet them over their win total of 5.5. And didn't feel great when it was 10-0, and it didn't feel great when Micah Alejado went down with an injured ankle, but they're able to get it done. I'll say this, a lot of takeaways from this game, and I know you want to chime in on Stanford. That team, man, who, buddy? We knew they were not going to be very impressive, and Ben Golbranson, they call him Dr. Ben. He's in his 6th season of college football. He had made 8 previous starts at Oregon State. That was an uninspiring effort, I'll put it that way. And his interception in the fourth quarter, tremendous play coming off the edge by Hawaii, but that really kind of gave Hawaii hope there in a 2017 game. What were your takeaways from the Cardinal on Saturday?
Yeah, Ben Golbranson, go get a fucking job, buddy. Like,
he wants college to be a
football,
doctor.
College football ain't for you anymore. So yeah, if you want to be a doctor, that's cool. Go do that instead. You know what? Here's the thing, though. There were a lot of things to complain about with Stanford, right? And you already did. You know, very boring. I mean, they had a 20-play, 85-yard touchdown drive, just kind of wearing opponents down, like you said. I mean, Frank Reich gave this game away. You know, I mean, as bad of a team as Stanford is, they were in a position to win this game, right? I don't know why you're having Golbranson throw on 1st and 10 at the 24. You're marching down the field a little bit. I know they had the big play to Chico Holt on that drive too, the 36-yard play that accounted for what, like more than
offense,
a quarter of Golbranson's passing yards. But you were finding success running the football, and then you don't in some key situations. And then, of course, you know, on that final possession after Hawaii ties it, 3 and out, 28 seconds, very impressive right there from Frank Reich. So as poor of a team as Stanford appears to be, this is a game that was there for the taking for them. And so I'm really curious to, you know, see kind of going forward how both of these teams are judged based on this performance. And, you know, like, we've already seen a massive line move for Hawaii's game against Arizona this week. Part of that is because, I mean, Hawaii got outgained by a Stanford team that looked awful in that game. But also, Mike Alejado's injury, I mean, there's really no reason to use him here in week one if you can avoid it. You know, in this game against Arizona, you're already a pretty big underdog anyway. As you mentioned to me, it would be shocking if he played. So, you know, we're seeing the movement against them. But, man, I just, you know, I was in full disclosure, I had Stanford plus the 2.5 here. I had Stanford minus 2.5 in my power ratings. I thought the summer line was pretty accurate. I was kind of excited about Frank Reich, you know, thinking, man, this guy's a really good play caller. You know, he's had a long history as an offensive coordinator, as a head coach in the NFL. And, like, he acted like he had never coached football before. So I guess shame on me for assuming that a guy who's, you know, pretty accomplished in his field would know what he's doing.
Yeah, looking at Hawaii, I don't know, as much as I would love to say I've got inside info, I do not. You know, we were trying to figure out, we were out having a couple of pops after the game, And, you know, Mike Alejado was in the locker room dancing around. So I don't know if that was the adrenaline after the game, you know, continuing there for him. But you saw him in the game. I mean, he was hopping on one foot. It was a gutsy ass effort by him. And, you know, he said after the game, you know, I told my teammates I'd die for you. And look, the drop off from him to the rest of the quarterbacks, I think Luke Weaver's their backup, seems pretty sizable. And you saw the importance of this game and why he went back out there. I don't know if he gives it a go. My gut tells me no. The market would tell you he does not. Once again, this went from 13.5 on Sunday, where I was frantically trying to find someone to make a bet for me at FanDuel on Sunday. Fortunately, I was able to get a little bit of it before this thing moved up to 16.5, now 17.5. And I'll say this, I'm not even in love with Arizona. I think they're going to be maybe the worst team in the Big 12 this year. So maybe this is a market overreaction. But if you're Hawaii, look at after Arizona. And if you're Timmy Chang and company, you never want to concede a game. I get all that. But you're traveling to a P4 team in Arizona, making their season debut off of a disappointing year. And you've got three home games following that. All are winnable. Sam Houston, Portland State, Fresno State, you'll be a favorite. You should be a favorite, assuming Elijah's health, in all three of those. And if you're able to get out of this first five-game stretch at 4-1 and only needing two wins to get to bowl eligibility, which I think is vital for this program, you do it. So curious to see what ultimately they decide to do with Alejado going into week one there against Arizona. But, you know, last thing on Stanford for me, you know, watching this team, look, they got some beef up front, and not a surprise that a P4 team is going to at times be able to bully Hawaii on the front line. They had two massive drives, as you alluded to, one leading to a field goal, one leading to a touchdown. But you ain't doing that in the ACC. And you know, you look at the schedule, Boston College, September 13th, maybe they're a favorite there. San Jose State, a team that, you know, power rates higher than Hawaii. Granted, you get them at home. Not that Hawaii's home field, or excuse me, Stanford's home field is anything to scream about. But no, it was a fun finish, no doubt. The atmosphere, the excitement. Timmy Chang, saw him on the field. We had a little clip that we put up on social media, thanking us for being out there. So that was pretty cool. A shout out from Timmy Chang. Love to go back. So maybe we can go back for the Hawaii Bowl if they're able to get there and the folks at Sheraton. So, yeah, this was a trip that I will not forget anytime soon. And a big thanks to everybody who was a part of it, including Kahala Shirts, the original Aloha shirt brand founded in Honolulu back in 1936. Next year, they'll be celebrating 90 years. They're a proud supporter of UH Athletics, and most of their Aloha shirts are still made right there in Hawaii. From classic Aloha shirts to stretchy performance wear, cooling polos perfect for golf, and even shorts, Kahala has you covered. You can shop online, kahala.com. That's KAHALA.com. They have 6 stores across Hawaii. And don't forget to check out their latest looks on Instagram at KAHALA. All right, other takeaways from week one, big adjustments that you made in your power ratings. I will note this: Iowa State went from 11-1 to win the Big 12 to 8-1 at DraftKings. Kansas State went from plus 550 up to plus 950 as the Cyclones get the win over in the slop in Dublin.
Yeah, so I mean, from a standings standpoint, that's a pretty bad loss for Kansas State. But if you really dig into that box score, Kansas State was the better team in that game. And it was, honestly, it was pretty clear that they were the better team in that game. So, you know, obviously it took a while for things to really get going there. I mean, we had 24 of the 45 points in the fourth quarter of that one. But, you know, Kansas State, from a success rate standpoint, on really on both sides of the ball, they were the better team there. So I do kind of wonder if maybe we've got a little bit of value here on Kansas State going forward. And in fact, you know, for me, even though Kansas State lost that game, I bumped them up in my power ratings a point and moved Iowa State down a point. Now, again, you don't want to take away too much from a game over in Ireland played on what looked to be a very slippery field. Obviously, it was raining throughout the course of the game. Just an odd situation. I mean, you know, you had Kansas State's starting quarterback's father and brother fighting with each other, which was fascinating.
I got shown that video on Saturday night, and I was like, that's not real.
And sure enough, right? It was real.
Dude, it's brutal on social media now where like it's so hard to tell what's kind of AI, what's real, what isn't, what's scripted, what's this, what's that. I will say this, it really wasn't much of a fight. So, you know, I wasn't too impressed with the ground game of either fighter in that one. But yeah, I mean, I bumped Kansas State up a little bit. I actually thought that they were the better team. So again, we'll see what happens kind of going forward with them. If there's a little bit of value in taking them moving forward. I will say this. So one bet I already played this week, I took Fresno State on Saturday. They take on Georgia Southern, and Georgia Southern going all the way out to California for this one. Lines adjusted a little bit. I mean, Fresno State pick them at circa, you know, kind of in that range across most of the market here. I have Fresno State a 4-point favorite in this game personally. I think this is something that we need to talk about here early on in the season. And you mentioned this already with Stanford and the way that they kind of pushed Hawaii around in the trenches a little bit. Kansas was not a good matchup for Fresno State out of the gate, right? You got a transfer quarterback in EJ Warner up against what, a eighth year senior in Jalen Daniels. You know, Lance Leipold there, still at Kansas. First time FBS head coach in Matt Entz for Fresno State. Like, there were a lot of things that pointed towards the Kansas side in that game. And I did take Kansas. I did lay the number. A nice, easy win there. I wish we had more rocking chair wins as the season goes along. But this is a much different matchup here in week one for Fresno State. You know, they got a game. They got some things they can look at on film, some things they can fix, stuff like that. Georgia Southern's not going to push them around the way that Kansas did. I get it. J.C. French is back as a starting quarterback for Georgia Southern, but they had their worst offensive numbers in the Clay Helton era last year with French as the starting quarterback. So I took Fresno State here, and I could be wrong in this game, but I think this is something very important to talk about early on in the season, where if you get dominated by a power conference team as a group of five program, like maybe we shouldn't take a ton from that data point. And so I'll pay to see it. Maybe Fresno State sucks. I don't know. I'll find out. But I took them here this week because I guess it's just so much different of a matchup for them. So much better of a matchup. Also for Kansas, all the renovations to the stadium. David Booth, whose name is on the stadium, gave them that giant donation for the NIL collective prior to the year. A lot of momentum for the Kansas football program right now. That probably wore off on the team a little bit and kind of leaked down to the field. Georgia Southern doesn't have that same thing. So, again, don't overreact too much to what really looks like a bad performance by a team, because when you play these non-conference games, stuff like that's just going to happen.
I want to circle back to Dublin real quick. Last year, Kansas State outgained every opponent that they lost to. All four of their Big 12 losses, they outgained their opposition. Now, they didn't lose the turnover battle over in Dublin. It was 2-2. It was very sloppy, as you alluded to. But it feels like the same story from a year ago. And will they be able to clean that up? We'll see moving forward. I'm not going to take too much away from Iowa State in a negative sense. This is a very good win. And, you know, last year, Georgia Tech goes out. They win week one against Florida State. And then they came back home. And I thought it would be, you know, kind of a hold your nose, fade them type of spot in week one. And Georgia Tech went out and absolutely destroyed the opposition, which was Georgia State. So they were able to win and cover in that game. But we have seen some teams really struggle coming back home. And I pointed this out over the summer. And this might just be a principle play. I don't make FCS numbers. I know South Dakota historically has been a very good FCS program. They did lose their OC to Fresno State, so that's less than ideal. Some pieces are gone. I think they're still a preseason top 10 team. But when you look at the situation at hand here for Matt Campbell's squad, you're coming back home, emotional Big 12 win, and then next week it's your biggest rival on your schedule in Iowa. So this is a classic sandwich spot. I do think the market has already adjusted to that. I'd be curious to see what this number opens up when it opens, you know, nationwide. FanDuel is the only place that currently has it at 15.5 in favor of Iowa State. But I took a little piece on South Dakota just out of principle. You know, maybe it's more of a first half look, maybe full game Iowa State's able to pull away. But I thought it was an interesting nugget in Phil Steele's preview magazine that all time Iowa State is 3-10 ATS against FCS teams. And I know last year they failed to cover in week one when they played North Dakota. Granted, that was a much bigger number. So that is worth noting. The last time they were, you know, around this number, they were a touchdown favorite against Northern Iowa in 23 to open up the season, and they absolutely hammered them. But I think this is a really tricky spot to come back from Dublin. Next week, you've got Iowa. This is a classic look ahead spot, letdown spot. Let's just get out of here with the victory. So I took 15.5, was hoping for like 17, Adam. And maybe we will get it later in the week if people just bet their pure power rating, because, you know, people out there who have numbers on FCS, maybe they see this as just being too far off market. I know Bill Conley, I think, lined this at 21. So that is worth noting that you're paying a pretty heavy tax here. But I took a little bit on South Dakota just based off of a pure situational angle, and South Dakota being a pretty strong FCS program historically. So that is one of the bets that I do have that is out there now. I mentioned I bet Arizona, but that number has ballooned up to 17.5. But yeah, week zero in the books. And now we turn our attention to, as Brent Musburger said on the podcast last week, maybe the greatest week one we've ever seen. Three top 10 matchups, Adam, in this week one.
Yeah, one thing I will say really quickly about South Dakota here and about, you know, some of the struggles for Iowa State. I mean, the Missouri Valley is legit. You know, I mean, if you look at Jeff Sagarin's numbers here, North Dakota State is number 57 in the nation for him. Remember, there are 136 FBS teams. He ranks all the FBS and FCS teams. And for North Dakota State to be almost a top 50 team, I mean, that's very impressive. South Dakota State is a top 50 team for him. South Dakota, 93. If I go off of his numbers compared to my power ratings, I would have Iowa State minus 15 in this game because he's got South Dakota power rated at about a 62. So if I slap home field advantage on it, I have Iowa State minus 15. But yeah, I mean, that's one where, you know, those Missouri Valley teams are really, really strong. And so, I mean, playing North Dakota State, South Dakota State, if as an FBS team, like, you're playing a middle of the road, like power four level type team in that kind of game. So I think it's important to put these FCS teams in the proper context when you're getting, you know, these crossover games, the FBS versus FCS early on here. So I definitely think it's important to, you know, to point that out before we get too far into the show, because I know we've talked about this before. I know friend of the podcast, Brad Powers, has talked about this a lot before. If a team loses to an FCS team or plays poorly, a la what UNLV did in a big favorite role, people don't want to bet on those teams. People aren't going to want to bet on UNLV. People aren't going to want to bet on any team that loses to an FCS team, maybe wins by one score when they're a two or three score favorite. Those teams oftentimes end up being pretty good bets as the season goes along. So that's something to keep in mind and track here as we go forward.
Well, before we hit a break, how about we mention this? Sam Houston versus UNLV. By the way, I believe they've dropped the state. I believe it's just Sam Houston. Worth noting there. I don't know. Bearcats with a K, though. They're still the Bearcats with a K. Paul Stone, two very important tweets. Paul, great handicapper, friend of the show, friend of the network, and he lives down in Texas, so he's got a little more insight. Couple of tweets that he pointed out earlier on Monday. He said, some sites, including ESPN, are showing Friday's game between UNLV and Sam Houston is at Bauer Stadium in Huntsville, Texas. Sam Houston is actually playing all its home games 70 miles away at Shell Energy Stadium in Houston as its home stadium undergoes renovation. So great nugget there from Paul Stone. This is not a home game for Sam Houston. They will be playing 70 miles away in Houston, Texas. So also worth noting there. But he did point out this, while many were zoned in on Stanford, Hawaii, others were searching for books somewhat, quote, asleep at the wheel, still showing UNLV as a 13-point favorite. Week zero adjustments were not reflected in that number. Rebels are a consensus 10.5-point favorite as of Monday. Yes, we did see about a 3-point adjustment, as you mentioned, with UNLV's struggles against a mediocre FCS team in Idaho State, 5-7 a year ago. So that number was 13. And now sits at 10.5. So no key numbers there, Adam, but you did see an adjustment after the Rebels struggled against the FCS team on Saturday.
Yeah, I think it's a really important thing to point out. I actually didn't know that until I saw Paul Stone's tweet about them playing so far away. So, Yeah, that's definitely one that, you know, slipped past me here. So I cut their home field down to half a point. I had it 1.5. I cut it down to half a point just because you're still going to have to travel to Texas, I guess. But I do wonder something interesting here about this is, you know, that's a big venue, right? That's a pretty substantial venue that they're going to be playing in here, you know, because, well, that's what, the home of the Houston Texans, is it not? So that's a pretty big play. I guess they still play at NRG. So what is,
I think it's the soccer stadium. Do they have a soccer team down there? Shell Energy. This is live. The Houston Dynamo plays there. We're
looking this up on the 22,000. Yeah, it is the soccer stadium. So that's interesting. That's a really interesting thing to be playing in a place that, you know, really hasn't hosted college football. I mean, I guess, well, Texas Southern plays there, actually. So,
you know, what's funny is UNLV, this will be the second straight year they've played an opponent on the road in a soccer stadium, because they played Kansas last year on the road.
That's right.
In a soccer stadium when Kansas was undergoing their renovations. So
that's right. You know, and I wonder, like, I mean, same Houston State football, right? So last year, really good season under Casey Keeler. He goes out to Temple. And by the way, Temple and UMass, you know, I like to go dumpster diving for college football games here. That's been a really interesting game with a pretty significant line move over the summer. But, you know, there was some decent momentum for this Sam Houston program last year. And then Keeler goes, virtually all of the roster goes, except for Hunter Watson, their quarterback. Now Phil Longo's there and he wants to throw the ball more. They're probably going to go more of this air raid West Coast type of style. Really, really bad fit. Like, I'm curious to know what sort of travel they get out of their student fan base here, not only in this game, but going forward. I'm really curious to know that.
Yeah, and that game will be a Friday night game. It's a busy weekday game. Week one is dominated, obviously, by games all over the map. We have Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and a Monday game. So we'll dive into some of those, some line movements. We're going to hit on a lot of the weekday games here on the pod, because Thursday, when Matt and I do the podcast, we want to give the show a little bit of shelf life, so we probably won't talk much about the Thursday games, maybe a little bit on the Friday games. So let's do this. Let's take a quick break. More with Adam Burke on the other side of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back here on the podcast. Adam Burke, Tim Murray with you. Shouts to all of you. The offseason has been amazing. All of the five-star reviews coming in, much, much appreciated. And last year, we cracked the top 200 of sports podcasts about 3 or 4 times during the season, which was incredible to see. This past week, Adam, for the first time in this podcast history, we cracked the top 200 not inside a football season. And I think a lot of that has to do with the great appearance from the GOAT, Brent Musburger, who I can't thank enough for coming in studio. And if you haven't listened to that, the shelf life on that is limitless, because we just talk old stories that he came across, and I've tweeted out a couple of them on social media. But cracking the top 200, very cool to see here during the regular season. And now we're in season, so hopefully we'll keep it rolling. 3 episodes every week. Thursday episode with Matt Newmans, early week episode with Adam, midweek episode as well. And one of our sponsors all season long, talk to these folks quite a bit out there in Hawaii, Rainbow Authentics, from game-used apparel to autographs and trading cards from your favorite University of Hawaii student athletes. Rainbow Authentics has you covered. Also, custom gear, so you'll look your best every day. Capture the moment, own a piece of history, and support Hawaii athletics. Rooted in community, built on excellence, Rainbow Authentics empowers student athletes and coaches, gives back locally, proudly supports its island roots. Supporting athletes, strengthening communities, empowering coaches. You can shop now, rainbowauthentics.com. Bring home a real piece of the action. Mike Kawazoe is the one running that. And if you want Hawaii athletics, you want that late night get out game to continue to thrive, Adam, Rainbow Authentics is the place to go. They got some badass hats that I was wearing on the field there on Saturday. But here we go. Week one of the college football season. A bunch of movers in the market. And I want to narrow in just initially on the Thursday. We saw some offseason love for East Carolina on the road at NC State. And you might recall they actually played each other at the end of the season. East Carolina won the Military Bowl. And then on Monday, with the limits back up because it's week one, we saw a bump back to NC State, now 14 market wide. What did you make of that line move? And anything jump out to you as we have eight FBS versus FBS games on Thursday?
Well, I had East Carolina a 10-point favorite, so this will be a game that I'm not betting on, but I'm going to be watching it very closely.
Good, NC State, a 10-point favorite.
NC State, a 10-point favorite. Yeah, sorry. Whatever. It's still early in the season for me, too, I guess. Yes, NC State, a 10-point favorite. So I'll be watching this one closely. Not a play on it for me. If I had East Carolina a 10-point favorite, I guess I'd have to play it. But yeah, you know, it's always interesting. I think that's another important thing to point out here, too, is that when you go and open your odds screen and you see the opening number for these games, that's typically going to be from DraftKings openers in late May. And these numbers adjusted as other books opened up throughout June and July. So, you know, a lot of these numbers had already kind of been molded into shape a little bit. And then now you're going to start seeing more movement because it is game week. Everyone's got all their stuff together and limits have increased on these games as well. So, you know, whatever the open says compared to what it is now, just remember to put that in the proper context. And, you know, I think a game like that, for example, is Boise State and South Florida, where, you know, this is one that DraftKings actually opened all the way up at Boise State minus 10. Now we're down to six, pretty much market wide. But when Circa opened, they opened eight. They were down to seven by early August. So it's not like all of this money has poured in on South Florida this week. It was kind of a gradual, slow burn throughout the summer. And then now we're going to get some pretty good indications of what people's positions are, you know, now that the season is actually underway. So just something I wanted to mention there that, you know, it's not like these games are moving 4 and 5 points this week alone or early this week alone. It's more often than not been a slow burn, except for, of course, that Hawaii-Arizona game that we talked about where we already have an injury situation at play.
Yeah. So just I saw Todd Furman point this out on Twitter, just some of the moves we saw on Monday. So I'll just read through them real quickly. By the way, people love when I talk line moves. It's their favorite thing when I do that here on the podcast. NC State out to 14. Remember, that's kind of bounced around. There was a total move in the App State game. So App State will be playing Charlotte at Bank of America Stadium on Friday night. And we saw under money come into the market today. So that now down to 49.5, 50. Love for Washington in week one against Colorado State. I think this thing opened up around 17.5, move out today to 22.5. We saw a little bit of LSU money come in. We saw some under money come in TCU and North Carolina. So that game on Monday night, and that was up at 59. And this week we saw that thing get smacked down to 55.5. So, you know, some moves to note as this week goes on. The board has been a bit busy here with the limits up. But as you look at the rest of Thursday, you know, the one game for me, a very important game, as I have Nebraska's win total over. And as Matt Eumanns let me know on Saturday's VSiN College Football Tailgate show, that Nebraska, I believe, has gone under their win total every year since 2017. So, of course, I went over their win total this year. What could possibly go wrong? But this game does make me a little bit nervous, right? Just sitting there at 6.5, kind of baiting people just to lay the 6.5 in Nebraska against Cincinnati at Arrowhead Stadium there. So I am high on this Nebraska team. I think they should be 3-0 going into a week four game against Michigan. But that one I have my eyes on as maybe being a little bit uncomfortable and maybe, I don't want, maybe say a live dog in that possibility. So I think if I were to have made bets here, it would have been South Florida at its original number. I'm not going to mess around with it at 6. Cincinnati is of interest, maybe if that gets to 7. And I might be tempted to take a little swing on East Carolina because, man, East Carolina loves to play the role of little brother, and they get up for these games against NC State, UNC. What was that game was that in like 2021? East Carolina had that crazy UNC game where I think they went off as a favorite. It was back and forth, if I remember correctly. But I think right now the one game that would interest me probably is ECU plus 14 and maybe Cincinnati if we get to a full seven.
So, all right, let's kind of sort through this here a little bit, because I think there is a lot to sort through. First and foremost, you talk about the line move for that game in Charlotte with App State and Charlotte. And first thing I did, right, was go and look. Am I missing some sort of tropical storm, some sort of tropical system that's coming in? Because that's about the only time you're going to get a significant weather related move this early in the week on a Monday or a Tuesday, is if some sort of tropical system is coming towards the southeast, the Gulf, something like that. That is not the case here in this game. And in fact, there's no bad weather forecast for this one at all. No wind, not really much rain, anything like that. So that's a move of, you know, maybe there's some suspension that we don't know about. Maybe the markets just don't really like either one of these offenses. Both of these teams with new head coaches, Tim Albin from Ohio at Charlotte, Dowell Loggins, who was an NFL assistant coach, was South Carolina's offensive coordinator. He's at Appalachian State now. But again, just something to keep in mind here. You know, when you get these big totals moves early in the week, important to check that tropical weather forecast. Maybe there's some sort of, you know, big wind storm expected, something to that effect. But that was the first thing I checked, and there's nothing to worry about in that game. Here's something else that I think is worth mentioning here. This is a game that most shows aren't going to talk about, and with good reason. Wyoming and Akron, right? So Wyoming down to a touchdown favorite, 49.5 the total in this one. And I am not saying that I'm betting on my alma mater here. The Zips don't really have much to play for this season. They can't go to a bowl game because of APR scores. So they can't play in the conference title game. Not that they were going to anyway, but not really a whole lot of goals for the Zips here this season. But Tim, you know this as well as I do, and you love to bet bad teams and hold your nose kind of spots.
Of course.
If I see money coming in on a team as horrific as Akron, like, that sends off alarm bells in my head, right? Or that Temple UMass game that I mentioned, where we have a flipped favorite situation, hasn't gotten out to three yet, but Temple is a 2.5-point road favorite here. UMass back in the MAC here for this season, not a conference game, but just something to keep in mind. Like, when I see these teams that are god awful taking money very early in the week, it catches my attention. And that's definitely one for me where, I'm not saying I'm going to play Akron. My number is Akron plus 6.5. But like, all market indications are that they're the right side in that game. And to think that Akron is the right side in really any game, I think takes a certain degree of psychosis. But that's what we've got here. And so that's something that, you know, if my power ratings lined up with Wyoming, say I had them a double digit favorite or something, I would pause immediately. So especially when you get these games early on in the season here, where you've got some of these weird non-conference matchups, something for you to keep in mind. I do want to circle back to that Nebraska and Cincinnati game you were talking about. I'm really curious to see what happens with this number. I know there's some places far away that are at seven. I think we get to seven market wide in this one, because you've got the third year Matt Rhule angle, right? Matt Rhule is a program fixer. He changes the culture of the program. By year three, they tend to take a pretty big step up and end up, you know, kind of exceeding expectations. And the other thing here is, you know, Danner Holgorsen taking over as the offensive coordinator last year for the final few games of the season. Dylan Raiola was really good in the final few games of the regular season. So seven, maybe even 7.5 wouldn't surprise me in that Nebraska-Cincinnati game.
Yeah, and look, I mentioned I bet it over the win total of Nebraska there. You know, you look at the history at Temple, double-digit wins. Baylor, double-digit wins. Year three, as we discussed in a podcast earlier in the offseason. But yeah, that number hanging at 6.5 does make me just a little bit uneasy. But I would imagine the public is going to be heavily on Nebraska, and we'll see if a book does pop at seven. Cincinnati's kind of an unknown for me this year. They do bring back a decent amount in a massive year for Scott Satterfield. He's very much on the hot seat. Year three for him. You think back to him being on the hot seat at Louisville, and then he was able to parachute out of there to get the Cincinnati job, and Louisville said, great, we'll bring home Jeff Brohm and things will be just dandy. So that is a game on Thursday. I think the two games that jump out to me that I'm looking forward to watching the most on Thursday would be Nebraska, Cincinnati, and then Boise State, South Florida. Obviously, with that massive line move. Did want to clear something out real quickly while you were talking. I looked it up. East Carolina did not play UNC in 2022. I was thinking of when UNC went to Boone and played App State in a crazy game.
Oh, that was
game. Wild. App State ended up closing a favorite in that game. UNC won 63-61 in, I think, multiple overtimes. But I will note this. East Carolina, the last two times they've played an NC State or a South Carolina or anyone like that in the regular season, 2022, lost to NC State by one. 2021, they lost to South Carolina by three. So history has been on the side of ECU in these types of game. I'll also mention this. We've seen no real movement on this one except to the under. How about the total in Miami of Ohio, Wisconsin on Thursday night? You discussed Miami when you wrote them up for the MAC, and we discussed it on the podcast. You are not expecting much from Chuck Martin's squad here on the road at Wisconsin. I'm not expecting much from Wisconsin. I would love somehow, some way, Redhawks to win this game. I don't think it'll happen because I do have Wisconsin under 5.5 wins. But the lowest total on Thursday night's board, 39.5 between Miami and Wisconsin.
Yeah, a lot of excitement expected in that game, it would seem. You know, and I just mentioned it too, that, you know, Phil Longo, you know, up there at Wisconsin, like, that was never a fit that made sense to me at all whatsoever, to be on Luke Fickell's staff with the type of offense that he wants to run. And now they brought in Jeff Grimes, you know, who was a pretty good assistant coach at Baylor, good at BYU, a guy that, you know, I think that this offense could improve a little bit under a guy like Grimes. You know, he's gonna kind of mold and shape his playbook towards this team. And this is not a team with great quarterback play. You know, they're always good at running the football, but not a team with great quarterback play. That's a tough part though, right? Laying 17.5 in a game where that's what, like 45% of the total, give or take. So yeah, I mean, that's a pretty tricky one there for me. I do want to mention one game on Thursday that I'm going to play here. And this is a line that's starting to run away a little bit. I only have it 17, but I think UCF is going to take Jacksonville State to the woodshed. I mean, Jacksonville State losing Rich Rod. They lost their starting quarterback. I think he's playing in the Arena League or something now. A lot of substantial losses for the Gamecocks coming out of last season. UCF, kind of an, you know, underwhelming type of year last year for them. I think that they could go out there and really have a statement type of game here. You know, coming off of a 4-8 season, really struggled in terms of the Big 12 over the last couple of years. Like, this is a chance for them to just humiliate somebody. And I think they can do it. So, I mean, they blew out Sam Houston last year, 45-14 in week two at home. This feels similar to me. So I think I'm going to lay the lumber with UCF here on Thursday night.
All right, let's wrap it up here. We'll have podcasts later this week diving extensively into the Saturday board. The Friday board, pretty interesting, certainly. You know, the game of note to me, Auburn-Baylor. We'll talk about that on Thursday for sure, but very curious to see that game, a very important game for both sides. Baylor hopes to win the Big 12. Not that this game has anything to do with that, but Auburn right now, a 2.5-point favorite. Kind of, we saw early Baylor love, now getting back to Auburn. So a little bit of a tug of war there in the betting market. What do we expect from Colorado in the post-Shador Travis Hunter era? But is this number maybe getting away from Georgia Tech? There's a lot of love regarding Georgia Tech this year as being a surprise team in the ACC. You think about that Georgia game that they had going 7-8 overtimes. Haynes King is back for another season down there. It is worth noting Georgia Tech did lose their best receiver to the portal, oddly enough, to Auburn. One of the, you know, key pickups of this offseason was the addition of Eric Singleton there at Auburn. So people singing the praises of him at Auburn. Friday night should bring some interesting games, no doubt. So anything on the Friday board jumping out to you there, Adam?
I have San Jose State a bigger favorite than what the market number is currently. And obviously, it's already been moving that way. I have them a 16-point favorite. I'm pretty worried about Central Michigan this year because they hired Matt Drinkle as the head coach, who was the offensive line coach at Army. So they're going to want to be a very physical team, a run the football type of team. I just don't really think that they're set up for that right now. So I kind of understand why this line's moving the way that it is. Although San Jose State's offense was so dependent on Nick Nash last year, and he's not there anymore. So that's one that concerns me. Even though I do have some power ratings value on San Jose State, I think obviously without question, the Auburn and Baylor game is fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
To me. Absolutely fascinating. I really like Baylor this season. I have them a 0.5-point favorite in this game. I know a lot of people are excited about the talent level for Auburn, but I think when all is said and done this year, we may be talking about Sawyer Robertson as a top 10 pick in the NFL draft. So I think Baylor's got a chance to be really, really good. The offense should be good. If Dave Aranda does what he's supposed to do on the defensive side, being a longtime DC, like, this team should improve. I don't know if I'm going to take Baylor in that game, but because I'm not really sure how they're going to deal with Auburn's athleticism. But that's a game that I think I like to call these fact-finding missions early on in the season. We're going to find out a hell of a lot about both of those teams right away in that game. So that's one that I'm keeping a very, very close eye on. And by the way, I want to make sure that we mention Notre Dame before we get out of here.
Oh, we got to the drinking
game. And I'm going to be the one to do it. I'm going to flip the script here a little bit. I don't want people to be playing the Tim Murray drinking game all week long on all three episodes of the show.
Look, it's week one, man. I'm puckered tight now. I'm terrified about this game. Which
Notre Dame minus 2.5. I have him a 5.5 point favorite. I do not trust Carson Beck. You got Marcus Freeman versus Mario Cristobal. I get it. CJ Carr, you're a little bit worried about first start on the road in a place like this. But, man, Notre Dame is to me, just clearly better than Miami. So maybe I'll have to eat some crow next Monday on the show. Maybe you can give me some flack, but I know you'll be there. Minus 2.5 is a play I like.
Well, I appreciate your confidence. We bet the under, as I mentioned, on the VSiN Weekend Morning Line and on this podcast a couple weeks ago. I don't want to say I like the under still at 50, which is out there at circa, but yeah, we'll certainly dive into that game. A lot of uncertainties for Miami at the wide receiver position. I love Notre Dame's defense. I was texted with someone today about, you know, just this game and how I hope that it plays out. I'm worried that what we heard out of camp is true and that Kenny Minchie was actually the slightly better quarterback, but it is worth noting. No beat reporters were inside those practices, right? It was all reported. It was all sourced. Not saying they had bad sources, but no one really saw much of anything. They saw the first practice where he did throw three interceptions. So we'll see in that one. So look, week one's going to be awesome. We're going to talk a lot about those three games all week long.
Work in one more thing real quick?
Of course.
I mean, this is half my show, so I shouldn't even ask for permission.
Yeah, what are you doing here?
So Monday, TCU in North Carolina, right?
So under money come in today.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one. I agree with this line move. I like TCU. I actually have TCU an 8-point favorite in this game. So this is one of the biggest overlays for me here in week one. Despite some of the interesting things he seems to do off the field, I think Josh Hoover is a really, really good quarterback there at TCU.
What does he do TCU off the field? What did I miss?
Oh, he dressed up as a furry to go to something.
Oh, okay.
It was all over. I don't know if it was his Instagram or somebody's Instagram. We talked about earlier on in the show. It's very hard to know what's real and what's not out there in the social media world. But I'm curious here. So after TCU's defense shuts down this North Carolina offense, obviously Belichick can't fire the DC, right? Because it's his son. But how long until Jordan Hudson is the offensive coordinator of this team taking Freddie Kitchens' job?
My man, Freddie Kitchens. He was on the staff last year. He was one of the few holdovers, right? Down there at UNC?
Yeah, well, I'm just scarred from his days with the Browns, where it was, I mean, there's a lot of unpleasant things being a Browns fan, but the Freddie Kitchens era, the 1 year as head coach, and then, you know, a year as the OC, not great.
Worth noting, from a news standpoint, Rasul Faison, the transfer running back from Utah State who rushed for 1,100 yards a year ago at Utah State. He has been granted his eligibility, so he will be eligible to play for South Carolina's season opener and all season long against Virginia Tech. That number sitting there, South Carolina -8 at most spots. I'm intrigued by Virginia Tech in this one a little bit. Is this a bounce back year for Brent Key after all the pressure and expectations a year ago? How about this move, though, from open to now a touchdown to the over for that game at Mercedes-Benz Stadium on Sunday afternoon? So a lot of hype regarding the South Carolina squad, and they get a little bit of good news regarding a transfer running back coming in there. So South Carolina laying 8 right now against Virginia Tech.
The Lenora Sellers effect, right, man?
Yep.
I mean, the dude can do everything, and he's a gigantic human being. And, you know, of course, a lot of people kind of wishfully hoping for maybe some of that Heisman investment to kind of come through a little bit. But you know what, man? I'm just, first of all, I mean, it's so great to have college football back. You know, I mean, it's, I know I'm kind of a baseball guy, and it's much easier to have college football coming back with the way that my Guardians are playing. But you mentioned it, and you and Brent talked about it. I mean, just an elite week one, and not even just, you know, Texas and Ohio State, LSU, Clemson, some of these marquee matchups that are out there, Alabama, Florida State, where we're going to find out a lot about both of those teams as well. But just so many other interesting games because of all the turnover in the transfer portal, the coaching carousel, all of that. Just so many things that I want to personally find out about so many of these teams. And I'm happy that, you know, now we're actually going to get to see some data points instead of just all the speculation of transfer portal rankings and all that kind of thing.
Worth noting, too, Bryce Underwood, as expected, he will start for Michigan as they open up the season against New Mexico. 35-point favorites there.
Go Lobos.
But the big one will be, of course, next week when they take on Oklahoma in that one down in Norman. So yes, I agree with you. We will get into all of these games. One of the games, as you and I love the G5, and I mean, Cal kind of is a glorified G5 team right now. I think Cal Oregon State's kind of a fun late night game. And our colleague, of course, Stormy Bonatoni, I predicted this. I'm very good at predicting Stormy's games. Well, it helps because I know her play-by-play guy is Dave Fleming. So it just kind of assumes that he wants to be out in the Bay Area because he calls Giants games. But Stormy will be at this one. We saw this number get out to 3 in favor of the home Beavers. And then today on Monday, we saw some money come back into the market. So it's kind of funny to note, and we kind of mentioned this with East Carolina, NC State, Adam, some of these market moves over the summer have just been pushed right back to where they were at open. Oregon State, Cal opened 1.5, sat 3, and now is back to 1.5. If I could get a cheap money line, I think I'll probably get involved with the Beavers here. I don't know what to expect from Cal. They're going to be starting the true freshman out of Hawaii who went to Oregon for a little bit. I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name, so I'm just going to call him JKS. I believe that's what he goes by out there on the islands. But Malik Murphy now at Oregon State after Duke decided they are going to go a different route with Mensah from Tulane. So is this the Malik Murphy return revenge season out there in Corvallis? I think Cal, man, hearing some weird stuff coming out of there. Obviously, a lot of transfers. They're coaching staff, you know, Nick Rolovich is on their coaching staff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nick Rolovich, who of course notoriously fired from Washington State for not adhering to the COVID vaccine mandate.
Yes.
For state employees.
Brian Harsin is their OC. Like it's a weird. And then you have Ron Rivera as the GM of that program. And some people believe that Ron Rivera wants to ultimately be the head coach there at Cal. So it's very bizarre out there in Berserkly.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. And by the way, Karina, who does a lot of stuff for us in terms of our promotions, our subscription stuff, our reads, Corvallis current resident. So maybe she'll run into Stormy up there. But what are we thinking? Saga Pulitele?
Sure.
Is that close? I don't even know.
Jaron Kawi Saga Pulitele.
Sure. I think we're going to go something like that. But also, I think it's worth noting, you know, Ohio State losing to Michigan last year in the game where Will Howard was very clearly concussed. Maybe there's a reason that they didn't really want to go to Devin Brown since he couldn't beat out the freshman from Hawaii here after transferring out to Cal. So Look, at least he's going to get to continue his education at a good institution.
There you go. We always look at the positive side here on the VSIN.
Oh, if there's anything I'm known for, it's looking at the positive.
Very optimistic. We call him Optimistic Adam. That's what we call him here on the network. Adam, this is great as always. We're going to be doing this every week. Just a reminder, folks, give us a 5-star rating. And wherever you're at, whether it be on Spotify or iTunes, the Brent Musburger interview still up there and will be up there for a while. So appreciate Brent yet again for doing that, coming in studio. And thanks again to everybody out there in Hawaii. God, we had such a great trip. Everybody was just so phenomenal, and for jumping in and helping us out all throughout the week. And Rainbow Authentics is going to be a part of this podcast for the entire season, as is Nahoku. So appreciate all of those guys supporting us, not just for the weekend, but for the year as well. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast. Two more episodes later this week, including the Thursday breakdown with Matt Eumanns. For Adam Burke, I'm Tim Murray. This is the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.